it's almost like every couple has thought of divorce
You thought
within a
divorce the
marriage.
idea of, like
Yeah.
in your
Yeah,
trash.
that's my relationship with academia too. I'm honestly, there are hundreds of times when I decide, when I was thinking, let me just quit. I'll just give up my academia. But at that moment, what's actually stopping me, regardless of, all the spirits, all my thoughts, goals, dreams, there's also this H-1B.
Hi everyone, welcome back to You're Not Alone, the H1B Talk podcast. I'm your host, Rosemary. Today, joining me is Len. She's a postdoc researcher at Yale focusing on social emotional learning. And I'm gonna have Len to introduce herself to our listeners.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lan. I'm currently doing my postdoc at Yale's Center for Emotional Intelligence, and I'm working on studying children's social emotional learning from the cultural perspective. I've been in the field of cultural psychology for more than 10 years, and this year is my 10th year since I've come to United States.
Yay, 10th year anniversary in the US. You must have, like a lot of stories to share with us. So I'm excited. Very
So
excited.
many of them, so many of them.
All right, where do we start? I know Lan has, like a very different background because she went to Belarus to study her bachelor's. And then Lan, do you want to just talk to us about your journey as an international student when you first came here?
Yeah, so I did my undergraduate in Belarus, also in psychology. But I was speaking Russian, and then towards the end of my undergraduate, I was a little bit confused about what to do. And then I was kind of doing a bunch of research. What can I do with a psych degree? Where should I go? And I did get offer from UK, Moscow, and United States. But in the end, I was really drawn to New York City because I was very interested in culture. So I was, I've heard that New York City is a melting pot. There are so many different cultures all melted together. So I just thought that it would be nice to come to a place like New York City to see as many colorful culture as possible, and to continue my studying psychology. And in a funny way, I think I visioned myself today since 10 years ago, because I did search online of my re career path of what would happen if I'm doing a PhD in psychology in the United States, and what does it take to become a tenure track professor and to be tenured and all those things. It took a little bit longer than I was thinking about. I thought I could have done all of these within maybe 6 or 8 years, but yeah, it's my 10th year and I just got my tenure track professor offer, and I will finally start to become a tenure track professor in psychology.
Wow, congrats. Is that a dream come true for you?
Yes, it does feel like my dream, or say my initial goal of coming here has been fulfilled.
So initially when you decided to come here, you were thinking that you wanted to go into the 10-year track.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing that you already had that figured out when you came here.
Yeah, sort of, because I was really interested in research. I was very determined. I thought that I would come here doing my PhD, starting my research right away. But then I have to tell you, the first thing is that I realized there's this gaps in between educational systems that will make it harder. I think it's more obvious in disciplines like liberal arts. It will be less impact if you are majored in math, in STEM, because there's not that many cultural or contextual differences between what you've learned in a different educational system and what you are learning in the educational system in the United States. like the whole, you know, I felt like I shouldn't have even taken the 2-year master before entering my starting my PhD program here. I was very shocked when I was still taking classes the first 2 years when I came here, because I was not even taking classes back in Belarus in my senior year.
Was your senior year in Belarus more like, you know, on the practical side?
Yeah, so I was doing practice. I was working on a crisis hotline for women suffering from domestic violence. I was doing my TA. I was focused on doing my research. But then when I came here, I started over again, like taking classes, taking exams, and before even getting to research. So that was really unexpected.
Yeah, I know, like, you know, life usually gave us a lot of unexpected things, but you made it through.
Yeah.
And then speaking of, you know, like this podcast, because we primarily just talk about, you know, like H1B. And then I know usually when you are going the PhD route, when you want to become a professor, I wonder how does, you know, like the H1B affect you in any way when you were, you know, like looking for jobs?
Yeah, definitely. So, well, as much as my dream has come true, I did have doubts on the way towards my dream. It's almost like every couple has thought of divorce.
You thought of divorce, the idea of, you know, like,
yeah,
in your trash.
Yeah, that's my relationship with academia too. Honestly, there are hundreds of times when I was thinking, let me just quit. I'll just give up my academia. But at that moment, what's actually stopping me, regardless of, you know, all the spirits, all my thoughts, goals, dreams, there's also this H1B. Because if I was thinking about quitting academia, I got to do something else, right? And I sometimes just felt like, yeah, industry also sounds not bad. When my friends were, you know, got off work, having a drink in a bar, I was staying in my lab doing my research. So sometimes I was thinking, what if I just quit? What if I also am having a nine to five job? What if, you know, I also want to try. This sounds interesting. I have friends who graduated from the same program as I did, and she got into the advertisement industry, and she made like double of my stipend. And I was like, why not? When I was struggling financially, I was thinking maybe I should try too. But all of those moments, the first question is, do you have a status? Like, do you have H1B? And then thinking of going through all those lottery system, like how many years do I have OPT and all those stuff, that just stopped me. I just started thinking, oh, that's too much. And I think along this way, like you kind of have this need for stability, which is not unreasonable desire for people to have. Like people, like avoidance of uncertainty, I think is one of the initial drives of human being. So everyone would want to avoid uncertainty. And I think the traumatic thing that H1B system gives us is that it creates the biggest uncertainty for
it's
you.
Too much uncertainty for you, literally. It's like getting the lottery and not getting the lottery can be like a major change in your life, you know? Like,
yeah.
Well, that depends on, see, like, for example, if someone only has 1 year of OPT, and then that means, you know, like one chance of the lottery, most of the time, if they don't get it, they probably go back to their home country. Yeah. And then thinking of, you know, like you mentioned, you had the idea of divorcing your dream career. When did this idea first surface to you?
I think maybe more so the first 2 years of my PhD program. I think that's a very interesting period of time when, you know, you're in your early 20s, all of your friends who have finished their masters, have started their career, have started their kind of their life started to be on track, but you are still a student. you start to have
right.
this feeling of you have nothing. Like they, you know, everyone else is moving forward, but you're still a student. And that's when you start to doubt, like, is it worth it? Can I do something else?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think actually a few months ago, when I was desperately on the job market, when I felt like I couldn't find a job and I was very anxious about jobs security, that's when I started to think, okay, what if I don't hang on this one tree and start to look elsewhere?
Definitely.
I'm still a human being. I'm worth way more than just doing research and than just being a tenure track professor. And you know, that's not the end of the world. But being an international, that is the end of the world. Because, you know, if I had a green card, if I had a status here, I would have had all the freedom to explore, you know, academia, non-academia. My pressure of looking for a job would have been like just 10% of what I've experienced. Because I think the other destructive component of H-1B system is that it ties your status with your job. So everything's like together,
everything
they go
is
hand in
like
hand.
interconnected, because like from, you know, like what you just have mentioned to me, it almost sounds like, okay, I wanted to divorce this idea of, you know, like going to be a professor. I wanted to try industry, but the H-1B struggle kind of, you know, like bring you back to this track.
Yes, exactly. It just pushed me back because, you know, one, I think, benefit in academia is that you don't have to go through the lottery system.
Right.
And I do know that that is some people's like reason why they stay in academia, but it is not for me, which is even worse because if you have a clear goal, you know,
yeah.
I just stay in academia, I'll just get my H-1B, get everything, get my green card done, that's fine. But I think I put too much passion in it that when it doesn't go well, it's not, I would not just enjoy staying here, because for me, the rationale is the other way around. It's not because I want a green card, therefore I'm here in academia. It's like, I want to stay in academia and be a good professor, but I need a green card to secure my job. So, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because they go hand in hand. You lose one, you lose the other. You have one, you have the other.
And then like it sounds like it doesn't matter if you're looking for industry jobs or, you know, like tenure track, like H-1B is still a thing, or should I put like at large status is always a component that you have to take into consideration. Have your mindset, you know, like changed in the recent job search? Because, you know, like you mentioned, you had an anxious period about not being able to get any job offers. Were you looking for both like industry and then like academia roles?
No, because I would have started looking for industry jobs now if I didn't have any offer by now, because the academia jobs go, the cycle of academia hiring goes once per year. It's almost the same as when you apply for graduate school. So you apply last year for the next year. So it's very slow, and therefore you have to start early. But I do know industry can, you know, go very fast. In a few months, you get an offer, you get refused. So like even if I started last year, I wouldn't have, you know, left this current position or something. And I was in a really dangerous situation. I'm on my last year of my OPT. I only have a few months left, and I didn't even know how industry would have looked like for me.
For industry jobs, like what kind of like industry roles is your, you know, like background going to like fit in? I'm curious.
Yeah, so because I'm not a clinical psychologist, I do know a lot of my colleagues, they became user experience researcher.
Okay.
Some of them would, if you're strong in statistics, you might become a data analyst. Some other people would go into think tank. But I think there has been a huge number of people of like liberal arts PhD holders who went to the user experience industry.
Okay, I see. And then that sounds almost like, you know, like a lot of like tech companies, because like, you know, they need a lot of like UI UX experience for their like web or app design and development. And then how did you feel when you finally get the job offer?
It feels, you know, actually the impact on my self-esteem has been so much that I just realized in the past 10 years how unfairly treated I was. I mean, nobody was unfairly treating me, but I was in a very low self-esteem position. I felt way more vulnerable just in general. Like, you know, for example, for a very simple like employer-employee relationship, you're on your status. You need them to do even the simplistic paperwork to sign your whatever OPT. That increased way more pressure of losing this job, because if you had a status, you lost your job, you lost money, which sucks, yes, but you could still stay here and find another job. But without a status, you lost this job, you lost everything. You just have a few more months to be here before you have to just pack and leave. I mean, the other, I think, struggling feeling is that I never thought that as an immigrant, like staying in the US is the goal of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And I believe like that's not the goal of a lot of like students who came here as international students. It's more like, I'm staying here because right now, at this moment, at this stage of my life, I see a good career choice. Or just simply, I don't want to be forced to leave.
Yeah.
I just simply want to have the freedom of choice of what kind of life I want to have, right? And then it's not that, you know, I'm so desperately wanting to stay in the US because everywhere else in this world sucks. No, but it's more like, yeah, like I could go to any other country in this world, but I want to do it when I feel that I'm prepared, when I feel like it's time, when I get everything sorted up, instead of, you know, you're telling me, okay, in 3 months, you're done, you know,
yeah.
And I'm not prepared at all.
I completely feel you on this, because like for us, I think a majority of the international students is like, okay, I've been studying and then living here for like a, I wouldn't say like a significant amount of time, but like a big chunk of our lives here. So like going to, you know, like entering the workforce sometimes feels like so natural to us, you know, like, okay, I've got my degree here. Of course, I wanted to have some, you know, like work experience here just to, you know, like get a taste of, oh, if I'm going to like it, if I'm going to like it, I might want to stay here longer. If not, I can go somewhere else. But I think like the H-1B system, of course, makes it like super hard, because like in order for you to be able to even get into the lottery, like you have to plan everything like so early. And then as you mentioned, because like your career choice and the H-1B is like, you know, they go hand in hand. So sometimes like you really have to think about your end goal. If your end goal is to simply just stay here, then you might want to consider those that offer you the H-1B or even like day one green card. But if you are drawn into, you know, like some roles, for example, some of my friends are in entertainment or like the music industry, it's like extremely hard for them to even find a role that sponsors H-1B or any sort of like immigration status. It's just like right now, okay, like here, US is my comfort zone. I want to stay here. I want to keep exploring. But, we're kind of like a transient population. So sometimes, like, it's not like 100% up to us if you want to stay here or not. Like, sometimes it's kind of like determined by fate. I don't want to be, like superstitious, but it feels like it.
I think it does. It does. Like with things like job, career, a lot of times it's just fate, it's just luck. But that's a nice feeling to have, But for us, I think we were pushed by this system to just move forward and bearing all those pressures to get something that we don't really want. I think that's the worst feeling. I can tell you, like, now that I've got my green card application in, but I procrastinated that whole thing for about 2 years.
Wow, 2 years?
Yes,
I mean, you mentioned like status and your career choice is connected, but why did you procrastinate? Tell us more about it.
Yes, so that's a very interesting, like, I internal dialogue with myself. Like, so I think I got my evaluation back in 2022, early of 2022. And then a lot, as someone in academia, for the permanent residency, you can go through the national interest waiver or even the EB1, outstanding personal things like that. So you just need to prove that, you have an advanced degree and you are an extraordinary personal, you're so genius that you're better than anyone else. And with a national interest waiver, you have to prove that you will be bringing the United States their national interests. Like whatever you're doing is contributing to this country. And it's just a lot of like paperwork. You have to, find all of your publications, you have to write your research summary endeavor and all those things. And I think the first stage of my feeling of doing that was that I was putting myself down. The first stage, whenever I started, I was like, I don't think that I'm that good enough.
You
I
were
don't think that
questioning yourself.
I think I was gaslighting myself. I was like, I don't think I'm that important for the United States national interest. And all those dolls and thoughts just, made me feel so bad about myself. Okay. Passing that stage, it comes to a stage when, oh, and also, it's like a paradox. When you're in academia. So on one hand, I was like, oh, I have these two more papers that are almost get published. But in academia, it's always almost get done, but it's never done. So I was kind of waiting for some of those things to be done, but then I realized that that's like a rabbit hole. It just never end. And then I was like, okay, I need to accept who I am right now. I forced myself to forget about all those in progress work and those impress papers and just be like, okay, accept yourself now from, 2023, June 1st. This is what you need to accept, what you have on your CV. Okay. And then there's these other consideration, you could, I mean, in academia, if you want to do a shortcut, you know how to publish a paper fast and get a, citation booster. But it doesn't mean that those papers are valuable. But, if again, if your goal is to get a green card, you can absolutely do that.
Yours was not. So I get you why, it was a hard feeling. Like first you have to prove yourself, oh, I'm so extraordinary. Second, like you have to, because you definitely for every work you produce, I'm sure you want it to be, like worthwhile. And then you want it to be because like it's your input. You wanted to put passion in it more than just get things done.
Yeah, I want it to be valuable for myself not just
Not
for
just
the
for the
academic.
green card, yeah.
Yeah, but you know that you could, spend, I don't know, a month and write a paper and get it published and just get your credit for your green card. But then I was like, no, I just can't do it. I tried, but sometimes, yeah, I just can't. I think I would look down on myself if I have, published a paper like that. Even if it helped my green card, I would be like, can I just never mention that I have ever written this paper? I don't want my name to be associated with such work if I have produced that. So that's another hard feeling. And I think in the end, it just all came into this philosophical question. Do I really need it?
Exactly.
But I would know that those publication will be so important to my green card.
It's a mental
But at the
struggle.
end of the day, I didn't do that. And it also just I wanted to say, like, a lot of people in academia struggle with imposter syndrome. And the green card application just made everything worse.
Oh
Yeah, and then at the end of the day, I just started to think, do I really need it? Do I really need to take extra time to twist myself to go through all these procedure and pay the attorney fee and everything to get this green card? Like, at the end of the day, what do I get it for? Like, why do I need it? And then you have to stand in line. You don't get
Yeah,
it right
the
away.
wait time is no joke because a lot of people think, okay, if I get the H1B lottery, I'm in a safe box. But unfortunately, that is not true. It's like problems in life is like endless. Like once you check, like you tick the box for one, there are like a long running list for you.
Yeah, but I've talked to a lot of friends who have, got their permanent residency versus not, and talking about, the procedure before they got it, it's like you feel so little and vulnerable at work. You are always worried that you're gonna get fired. Even any like small mistake will make you feel like, oh, I would be fired. What if I'm fired? That's the end of the world. But I think once you get it, you don't feel like it's you don't feel as sensitive as you are. And as a matter of fact, you don't have to be that sensitive at work because that's not even a healthy mental state to have when you're working. If you're always in the mindset of, am I wrong? Am I doing anything wrong? Does my boss like me? If your mind is circled with all these questions, you can't work well. Like you perform better when you feel more relaxed.
It sounds like if you think, okay, like the status where like green card is a must, it almost sounds like before you're having it, you almost think like there's a piece of me is missing compared to like my coworkers who are, like natives or like who have the permanent residency.
Totally. You are never like at the equal status unless you actually get a status.
Yeah, I think it's because like the H1B or the status thing is making the job search and then your career path like I wouldn't say like a bit difficult. It's like significantly difficult. So when you are, at your daily job, like this is something that you can't help to think about it. Or unless, like 'cause I think I'm in a different like stage right now because I still have school as like a backup option. So I don't feel like okay, like my coworkers are superior or if I don't have the H1B, I'm inferior. I think I focused more on the work itself rather than oh, if I have the status or not, because I was thinking like, okay, what if I can't stay here? If I can't stay here, I can't stay here. Like I was already accepting the fact that okay, I probably won't stay here forever. But I know like it's hard, like
So I think, you know, my mindset changed significantly since I graduated. Like when I was on the F visa, I felt way more secure, to be honest, because, you know, I had my F1 visa and I know, you know, it won't end until I finish my PhD. But once you start your OPT period, I think you're always on this like TikTok, like the you know, it's time's up, time's up. I got into that mindset.
I feel you, because like honestly with the F1 visa you're definitely more secure, because like you don't need to worry about the 60 day like or the 90 day unemployment, because you still have school, you know,
Yeah,
at
and with that, you know, it almost means that if I lost it in academia, I will not be staying in academia because you can't, as I said, the cycle of employment in academia is per year. You can't, if
Right.
you miss, if like, if saying like I've, like, for example, now there are way less positions already. Like there's almost no tenure track professor position anymore. There's just a few postdoc position until next September. So, you know, if you lose your job now, you're done. You have to find like a job that is outside of academia, which means that if academia is your dream, you have to give up your dream.
Yeah, it almost sounds like, you know, like double torture. It's like if you lose one, you lose both.
Yes, you lose both.
But I feel happy for you. You got the offer and then you're starting in August. So like right now, do you feel like it's a relief stage now for you?
Yes, and I do feel empowered way more, even in interpersonal relationships.
Because now you feel like, okay, we're equals now.
Yeah, and yeah, just in general, I just feel like, you know, a lot of internationals are so talented. They've gone through so many things, and just a simple fact of mastering two, you know, languages is a, you know, is
It's
some skill.
extraordinary.
Yeah, it's not everyone has that skill, but I think such skills have been taken for granted in the United States because I don't know why, but you know, regardless of the fact that the locals don't even know a foreign language, they think foreigners knowing foreign languages and speak English well is just something basic.
It's a prerequisite for you to be able to, you know, like get a job, like any sort of job, because unless you know your job requires you to speak like your home language like 100%, or else
Yeah.
you have to speak, you know, like at least, you know, like conversational English to be able to get the position.
I just think it's very easily to be underestimated of the simple, you know, language skill and having experience of living in different places, actually speaking the language. I know a lot of students in the United States have had the experience of study abroad, but you know, not everyone has that experience. And even when they have the experience of study abroad, they were not forced to master the language at the same level as, you know, a foreigner coming to the United States.
Yeah, because like that study abroad is, you know, like more for a short amount of experience. It's not like, okay, I'm staying there for my entire bachelor's or master's. It's more like, you know, like add like almost like adding some flavors to the college life.
Yeah, and you know, the assumption is that, oh, you're still learning, you're international, you just came to this country. But for us, you know, you have already passed the TOEFL. You should have this, you know, you should just be the same as all Americans.
When we are looking for jobs, employers like they're requiring the same, but if you don't empower us with the status, it's hard for us to stay here like long term to, you know, like contribute our values to your company or your schools. It's like a, you know, it goes full cycle. So I don't know like how we can, you know, like break in like this cycle. It is hard for sure. And then I think, you know, also one thing that we have to pay attention is definitely our mental status when we're in
Yeah.
this journey. 'Cause like being in a foreign country, just living here is already, you know, like a pretty tough situation. But you know, like complicated with the status, and then also like the career choice is, you know, it's a lot to take in. Do you have any strategies to, you know, like adjust your mental status when you're feeling, you know, the imposter syndrome you mentioned, or feeling, you know, like anxious about the future because there's just too much uncertainty? Yeah. Like I'm like, I changed my mindset just because I feel like, okay, it's so uncertain. Let me just embrace it. Like I'm on the other side right now. 'Cause like before I was like, okay, I can't take this. Like if one thing goes out of my hand, out of my control, I break down. I'm like, okay, like I have zero control in life, but I'm like, okay, like since every day is so uncertain, like whatever. Yeah. Like this is my strategy. I don't know like how you usually, you know, have your internal dialogue, or how do you comfort yourself?
I actually think that is maybe one of the best strategies. Just let it go because we do not have control over everything. And unfortunately, this, you know, H-1B and permanent residency status are among the ones that have brought us the biggest uncertainty, that we can't do anything. Like when I, you know, recently when I told my American colleague how, you know, right now I just looked up the permanent residency approval has been processed up until 2020. And she was shocked. She's like, did they just hire two people working on this for the entire country? Like, how come? Like, is there a way to expedite? I'm like, not really. Like that's, you just have to stand in line. She's like, that's insane. Like how can anyone works like that?
Like honestly, I still don't get how the, you know, like the whole like getting in the line, or like the way here it works, because you know I haven't reached that stage yet. And then like for my best interest, I decide, okay, let me not worry about that yet, because like if you know like getting some like research or more information in that might just makes me, you know, like worry more, because like right now, okay, I'm still in the H1B stage. Let me worry about that later. Yeah. 'Cause like it seems like right now you definitely deal with uncertainty better. Do you have, you know, like any tricks or strategies, and especially, you know, you're in the psychology field, that you can share with us? 'Cause I have, you know, like a lot of friends who are really, really, I would say tortured by the H1B lottery, because it's a simple lottery system. It's not like, okay, like if I prepare myself well, I have a better chance, because it almost feel like I can't do anything.
Yeah.
If you can't put up with the fact, it's gonna make your march so difficult. 'Cause like right now, I think the lottery closed, the lottery registration closed on the 25th, and then the results should probably come out by the end of the month.
I think at this point, I'm more practical than psychological in regards to this situation. I would say, see if you have any plan B. Like if you didn't get it.
Right. Yeah, 'cause
And
like
if
almost have your plan B, you know, with the NIW. I think this is like a route that whoever is in the academia route can, you know, like go ahead and then explore. 'Cause like you also mentioned there's benefits of like submitting, like what do you call it, the priority date?
the priority date.
Yeah, 'cause like now the school is going to help you with the green card, but you already submitted the, you already got a priority date, so they're going to use that date instead of like a new date. For example, you just submit this year, that's probably gonna take even longer.
Yeah.
All right, I think I have one last question for you, Lan.
Yeah.
Do you have any messages for, like people in your role specifically, those who are doing PhD or just considering, going to like a 10-year role in the near future? Because you've shared so much with me, like how your mentality has changed, and then also like how this past 10 year has, like taught you so much about, like your dreams, your passion, and also balancing all those with the status situation.
Yeah, I do have one message. From my experience, I think I got lucky. When I was getting the interview, like applying for the job in the last season, I was in China. The lucky part of being in China was that I had all my friends, family, home people tell me it's fine, like just come back, we are here for you, like we back you up, you're not going anywhere, this is your country, you don't worry about the status anymore, you can just be here, and you can and they're so confident in me, they're like, you can find a way better job than when you get there, and things like that. It gives me the confidence. It gave me a sense of security versus when I did see a friend who's also in the same situation, but he was here. So he was experiencing way more stress because he was thinking, if I don't get this job, I'll have to go home and I don't even have a plan at home. But I think even like reminding yourself that you worth way more than a status, and also like about the gaps that we talk about based on the evaluation system, you definitely value more than you think.
Yeah, it's like don't really associate your personal value, like how good you are as a human being, to your immigration status. That's not.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think it's very easily to tie them together, even without you noticing. You just automatically think that I'm worse because I don't have this status.
Yeah, exactly, 'cause we've all know that status, especially if you're doing the H-1B route, is based on pure luck. You want the stars to be aligned for you rather than push yourself too hard. It's like, okay, I have to work extra hard to be able to get this. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It's like, okay, sometimes it's like no pain, no gain. But in the case of H-1B, it might be, on the other side. It's like, okay, the more relaxed you are, maybe the better chances you will get the lottery. Who knows, right? Let's be superstitious.
I do think the struggle now that we witness people have is because what we were talking about at the beginning is that the goal is no longer that to stay here. The goal is more like self-exploration, self-fulfillment.
Experience.
But then the status is kind of in the way. So it changed the dynamic. I've talked to like immigrants back from the 2000 or the 80s, 90s. Their goal was to,
Yeah,
definitely stay here.
stay here. Yeah.
Yeah, and never go back and things like that. So they had a totally different goal. So that maybe mentally that will make their life easier. But I just think right now you have to realize like what is your goal, and just don't let this status to tie you up. The world is larger than this status.
Yeah. And then also, it's very important to have your family and your friends support with you on this journey. Because, like, I think sometimes, like, parents worry about this more than you do.
And then they make you feel like you are alone. They sometimes may even make it feel like this is your task that you have to finish.
It's not. It's more like, play by the ears. 'Cause like we don't know how tomorrow is going to be, especially when the fate is not up to just us to decide. It's like a two-way relationship as a as an international student or international worker in the US.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm just very worried to see that the situation is getting worse and worse year by year, surprisingly. 'Cause I thought, I maybe I'm too optimistic. I'm thinking life will become better and better year by year,
It's
but
still better and better, but not in, a very specific way that you probably imagine. 'Cause like even though, like being able to stay here is more difficult year by year, but that also means, we're stronger and stronger because we're still here, even though it's so difficult, right?
oh my God.
Yeah,
And
let's stay
why,
optimistic.
and why do we have to?
We don't have to. It's all up to us. Like, this part is up to us. It's like, like if we're still here, it means part of us still want to be here.
That's true. That's true. Thank you so much for your time. Peace. I'll see you next time.
Please follow and subscribe to this podcast if you want to stay updated to the most recent content. You can also follow the podcast Instagram account. It's called the H1B Talk, and I sometimes share some behind the scenes and also previews of the podcast. If you want to be featured on this podcast, you can DM me on Instagram. You're listening to You're Not Alone, the H1B Talk podcast. I'm your host, Rosemary.